Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be finding out a bit about the Fabrica Gallery, which is located in an old church on the corner of Ship Street and Duke Street, right in the centre of Brighton. Then we'll be hearing from a local organisation which has just started a series of informal drop-in sessions to help women who are suffering from domestic abuse. Our radio doctor, Dr. Hilary Jones, will be telling us about the latest scheme from the NHS to help us to lose weight. And we'll also be hearing about a group which is about to run a series of one-day sessions on the subject of how to adjust from full-time paid work to retirement. As usual, I'll be giving out various email addresses, telephone numbers and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So, first of all, to the Fabrica Gallery, which, as I said, is located in the centre of Brighton, in an old church on the corner of Ship Street and Duke Street. If you're a regular listener to At Home This Morning, you may remember that back in November, I went there to attend the presentation of an award for special activities in the arts locally to Deborah Roberts. And while I was there, I thought I'd find out something about the building itself. I spoke to one of the staff there, Anna Colwell, and began by asking her what her connection with the building is.
So I volunteered here for the last year or so, and I've just started my student placement. So I have most experience in working in the front of house in the gallery area and sort of welcoming the guests and helping them to enjoy their experience within the gallery.
So I haven't been here for some time, and it's certainly changed quite a bit since I last came in.
Yes, definitely. I think sort of we've had a lot of restoration done. So the stained glass windows, which we can't see at the minute because they're blacked out for the exhibition, but they've been restored and cleaned. Similarly, the flagstone floor, that's been restored as well. And our current project is trying to restore the columns which sort of line the main gallery space. And we want them to sort of be returned to their former beauty.
Quite slender, really, aren't they, considering that they're made of wood?
Yes, they're ornate. There's more information about them in our book, which we released very recently, called If These Walls Could Talk. And it goes into detail about, for example, the stained glass and the columns.
Do you have a lot of exhibitions here?
We do, yeah. I mean, this year alone, we've sort of had to come back from COVID and with a bang. And so we've had a marvellous tree installation called the Forked Forest Path, and that was incredibly popular because it was such a well-known artist, Olaf Eliasson. And then after that we had the kiosk, which was a more a meditative space, which was based on sort of architectural art rather than the sort of crafts or paintings.
You've got a very good location here, right in the centre of Brighton, haven't you?
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. We enjoy sort of inviting people off the busy streets of Brighton to sort of come and experience sort of a more tranquil, reflective place to come and sort of contemplate the art on display without the noise, without the bustle. And you very much feel as though once you step into the place, you're in a different sort of nest. You're in a sort of an oasis. And I think that's definitely sort of helps us to reflect on the art that's actually on display.
What's the next exhibition you're having?
The next exhibition will be in springtime. And at the moment, we're still trying to sort of plan it. And I'm personally not involved with that area. But I know that we always plan to have an exhibition which reflects the sort of the space, because we have such a beautiful space, we want to be able to sort of use the art in a way which makes the most of it.
Do you find you get, during the tourist season, that you get many people coming in off the street at random?
We get all sorts of people coming to visit. We have people that have heard about their exhibition in London and want to come down and visit it. We have people that think it's a church because of the architecture, and they come in and they find a church set up, sort of but filled with art instead of pews. And it's a surprise. And people can still come in here to meditate and reflect on their religion. But they're also offered the chance to sort of educate themselves and experience the art as well.
It was a church originally, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So it's now been a gallery space for 25 years. And we have our recently published book, If These Walls Could Talk, which discusses the building's history in a lot of detail, particularly its religious side.
So how can people find out more?
So if you go onto Fabrica's website, if you type in Fabrica Brighton, it will come up with our current exhibitions. It will come up with different groups that we help to support and run, in fact, including our sort of community projects that we outreach to various people. We have different groups for men, women, children, sort of families, individuals. And it's all available on our website. But if you want to contact us more, you can find our email address on our website. And you can sign up to our newsletter, and it's all included there, and you're most welcome. Anyone's welcome.
And presumably you're always on the lookout for volunteers to help out.
Certainly, yes. We are very grateful for our volunteers, and they're a force. They're a brilliant asset to our community. And they help to make Fabrica a welcoming environment.
Anna, thanks very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
I was talking to Anna Colwell of the Fabrica Gallery to find out about the gallery. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is www.fabrica.org.uk. That's www.fabrica.org.uk. Which is spelt FABRICA.org.uk. You can also email them on office@fabrica.org.uk, or you can phone them on Brighton 778646. That's 01273 778646. Well, now, unfortunately, on to a less pleasant subject. One of the many problems affecting society today, and one that never seems to go away, is that of domestic abuse. An organisation which was set up in Brighton to counteract this is a group known as RISE. And recently, they sent out a flyer pointing out that they were starting a new series of informal drop-ins for women affected by domestic abuse. To find out more about it, I spoke to Pilar Espinosa on a not very good Zoom circuit, and I began by asking her to tell me what RISE is.
RISE UK, which is a domestic abuse charity for women in Brighton and Hove.
And you've just started a new project, which is a drop-in for women who've victims of domestic abuse, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. It's a drop-in for women aged 55 and over who are experiencing domestic abuse, also for the friends or family that might be concerned about someone over 55, lady over 55. It's a safe space to discuss any concerns, past or present, and get some professional advice.
So it's not just a case of sisterly support from fellow victims, but you're able to offer them professional counselling and so on.
Yeah, it's not counselling, but it is support and advice from a domestic violence professional community outreach worker, and to discuss any concerns and get any professional advice.
How long has this scheme been running for?
The first session was on January the 4th, and it's going to be running every Tuesday for the foreseeable future.
And what time and where is it?
So it's every Tuesday at 3:45 for an hour. And it's at the Loft Room at Cornerstone, which is on Church Road in Hove.
Okay, now, do people have to let you know in advance they're coming, or can they just turn up?
No, people can just turn up, and we will be there waiting for them from 3:45 to 4:45.
I'm just wondering, if anybody can drop into this session without letting you know, aren't you a bit worried that perhaps the partners of the people who are coming to you might turn up unexpected and just try to disrupt things?
That's unlikely to happen, but if it does, there's two of us there and we can deal with it. There's also, the venue is very secure. Really important thing is that it's very accessible. It has a ramp and lift to go up it. But anyone with mobility problems will have no problem attending.
Is there any charge for your service?
No charge for the service whatsoever. It's a free drop-in.
And I noticed that you mentioned when you said what the organisation was, that you catered for women. Of course, some men are victims of domestic abuse. Are you planning to set up anything similar for them?
No, our organisation works only with women, but there are other services in Brighton and Hove for men who are experiencing domestic abuse.
And how can men find out about these?
Contacting the council would be a good way to do it.
How did the first session go?
It was good. It was very interesting. It's a very nice venue and is in a very good location, very easy to access with good transport links. And we're looking forward to seeing people there.
How can people find out more information?
They can go on the RISE website, which is riseuk.org.uk.
And that's RISE spelled R-I-S-E.
riseuk.org.uk.
OK, well, thanks very much, and I hope it goes from strength to strength, although having said that, of course, the fact that there's a need for this service is a bad thing. Pilar Espinosa, thanks very much.
You are welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
I was talking to Pilar Espinosa of RISE about their newly opened Tuesday afternoon drop-in for victims of domestic abuse. It takes place at the Cornerstone Centre, which is at the back of the big church in Palmyra Square, every Tuesday afternoon from 3:45 to 4:45. And there's no need to book, you can just turn up. However, if you do want to get in touch with RISE, you can phone them on Brighton 622 822. That's 01273 622 822. And you can get more details from their website, which is at riseuk.org.uk. That's riseuk, RISE being spelt R-I-S-E, of course, .org.uk. Now, of course, many of us, me included, tend to rather overindulge in food and drink over the Christmas and New Year period. So what better time of year for the NHS to mount a new part of its Better Health campaign, encouraging us to lose weight and explaining how to do it in the least painful way? To find out more about the campaign, I spoke to our resident doctor, Dr. Hilary Jones, and I began by asking him to tell me about it.
It's the latest phase of the NHS campaign for better health, and it's about how weight loss can benefit you in six major diseases.
I see. Can you give me a rundown on what those benefits are?
Certainly. We know that 63% of the British population are overweight or obese, and that predisposes them to an increased risk of six significant diseases, namely type 2 diabetes. 13 million people are currently at risk of developing type 2 diabetes with all the complications that that can entail. But also blood pressure tends to be higher in people who are overweight. That can lead to heart disease and to strokes. We know that people are more likely to suffer from chronic back pain and joint discomfort because of being overweight. And importantly, there are at least 12 cancers which are associated with overweight. And these would include cancer of the colon, cancer of the breast, the pancreas and the kidney. And that's why the Better Health campaign is supported by people like the Liver Trust, the Kidney Cancer UK and other organisations that are right behind it, because we want to get this message across to people. It's not just about looking at what the scales tell us about our weight, but improving our health going forward.
Now, the question about having a natural body shape, because I'm a little bit tubby, and that tends to be my family's natural shape. My father was the same shape, that he lived to be 98 without any serious disease. So I'm wondering, whether a standard body shape is what we all should be aiming to achieve or not?
I think shape is far less important than weight. So, you know, there are people of all sorts of shapes and sizes, and that's absolutely fine. And that's largely genetic. But in terms of weight, we know that carrying too much weight for our height generally increases this risk of inflammation. And that's one of the reasons why COVID-19 is particularly serious for people who are overweight, because the two things cause inflammation, and acting together, it's more likely to cause serious disease from COVID. It's another thing to think about. But shape itself, we're all different shapes and sizes. Part of that is genetic. It's weight that's the important factor.
Okay. Now, people are always trying to lose weight, and they go on various diets which are more or less successful. What tips can you give for people who actually want to lose weight and do it seriously?
I think my top tip would be to be patient. Don't aim to lose weight drastically in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You'll only become despondent and disappointed when it doesn't happen quickly enough. The body is very efficient. It hangs on to the extra pounds. If you aim for 2 months to 3 months, however, you're much more likely to succeed in your target, reaching your target. And then you can give yourself a pat on the back and your motivation can be maintained. I think people try and do things too quickly. So give yourself time. Think about what you're eating, why you're eating it, and when you're eating it, and portion sizes, a bit more physical activity, and get the tips from the Better Health webpage. And I think you'll be much more likely to succeed.
And the Better Health webpage is nhs.uk/betterhealth, is that right?
That's correct.
How much weight should you think about losing, say, in a couple of months?
Obviously, a lot depends on your starting weight, but most people can lose 2 pounds a week without it being too arduous. So if people aim for something like 2 pounds a week and no more, they're much less likely to get the cravings and to abandon what they're doing. But 2 pounds is realistic and it's achievable. And the updated NHS weight loss plan, which is part of the Better Health campaign, shows that on average, people can lose 5.8 kilos in a 12-week period, which is good, gradual, achievable weight loss.
And presumably you should weigh yourself at the same time every day rather than doing it at random, because the amount you've eaten or drunk can affect your weight up and down by a pound or so, can't it? I remember from my school days being told that a pint of water weighs a pound and a quarter. So if you've,
that's right,
if you've just had drunk a pint of tea or something, your weight will have gone up by about a pound.
Yeah. And for that reason, I would not advocate people weighing themselves every day. I would rather people weigh themselves maybe every fortnight, because there will be daily fluctuations. And if people see that they've put on half a pound since yesterday, since they've been dieting, that they'll get awfully despondent and give up. But if they weigh themselves every fortnight, there should be a gradual trend to weight loss, and that's what you want to achieve. So give up the everyday obsessional weighing on the scales. Every fortnight's enough.
So it's the overall trend we're aiming for, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've told us about the Better Health website. What other support is there available?
Well, they've teamed up with 16 commercial partners, some which are involved with physical activity and some which are involved in weight management. So this gives people, as well as free advice from the NHS apps, it gives people the opportunity to have free guidance from these organisations, or help at a special discounted price. And so anything that helps people to stay on track, keep motivated, has to be welcome. But as I say, there are 16 organisations which can help. And the whole campaign is backed by people like the Liver Trust, the Kidney Cancer Charity, and other charities besides. So everyone signed up to this, and it's a really good campaign to join.
And some local authorities provide Better Health campaigns, don't they?
They do indeed, and it's worth them looking at what the local authority can provide to see if they've got help as well.
That means you can get help in person, assuming COVID doesn't stop you, that is.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dr. Hillary. I shall have to go away and try and apply some of what you've told me, I think.
Well, we can all do with a little bit of weight loss. I certainly can. It's tempting to put on a bit of weight over this period, but as long as we get back on track, that's all that matters.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Take care.
I was talking to Dr. Hilary Jones about the NHS's latest Better Health campaign. You can find out more by going to their website, which is at www.nhs.uk/betterhealth. That's www.nhs.uk/betterhealth. Well, we're all getting older, and of course, for most of us, there comes a time in our life when we have to change from working full-time to being retired. And depending on our circumstances and our personality, this can either be a smooth process or it can be quite traumatic. In February, a local organisation will be starting a course that runs for 6 weeks, one day a week, and is designed to help people adjust to this major change of life. The course is called Older, Wiser and Still Working. And to find out more about it, I spoke to one of the organisers of it, Chris Baker, and asked him what the organisation is that's running the course.
It's being run by a small social enterprise, of which I'm one of three directors, called Work and Learning Opportunities. It's 10 years old and was a spin-out from the University of Brighton originally. And this is part of a programme of work we've been doing over 4 years, really focusing on the transition into and through the stage of retirement and older age.
And why do you feel there's a need for this sort of programme?
Well, the important thing is, I think, that what's not recognised well enough is that the stage of moving away from work and career and contemplating the next stage of life is quite a challenging one for a lot of people. Challenging for a whole series of ways. For some, it's about insecurity of income. For others, it's about insecurity and a lack of, if you like, feeling about where next. Nevertheless, it's a very important part of life. And for many of us, it can last, you know, 20, 25 years. So we feel that many of the people we've encountered during the programme over the last 3 or 4 years have articulated a need not to sort of stop working, but to think differently about the work that they might do. And by work, we mean both paid, full-time, part-time and volunteering, or a combination of any of those. So if you like, it's a chance for a reset, and that's what we offer. What I would say is the other thing about it is that two of us who run it, Maureen and myself, are in our 70s. So for us, it was about a lived experience. We're still working, still volunteering. So in a way, we recognise that in ourselves, the same sort of anxieties and concerns emerged. And when we began to share those with others, that was clearly the case for many people too. I mean, the other thing to say about us is that primarily we worked in universities, in particular for the Open University, Maureen and I. So one of our skills is in writing materials. And our model is to write materials, work with a community partner, in this case, Hangleton and Knoll Project, who we've worked with before, because we believe in working with and through community organisations, piloting materials, and then enabling any voluntary organisation who wishes to run the programme to have them for free and to offer to train them to use the materials, if you like. So it's not part of an income generating activity for us. It's part of our social commitment, and in particular, a commitment that involves tackling ageism, which I'm afraid is all around us.
Yes, indeed. And of course, there are some people who've been so tied up in their work that when they retire, there's nothing for them to do.
No, and there's nothing sadder in a way. And I think when there's nothing to do, what that results in is a loss of confidence. It's amazing the number of people you will encounter who've held responsible jobs or demanding jobs, cope with a lot through their life, and yet get to this stage and are lost. The other thing about this phase of life, too, is about maintaining health and well-being. So one of the things we're really keen to do is to see people look again at work in the context of a balanced lifestyle. And that's not assuming that people don't continue to need income. which they may well do, but also getting them to think about how does it fit in now with a different pattern of living.
Let's talk about the project that's just about to start.
Yeah, sure.
You say that you're preparing material for the Hangleton and Knoll project. Are they actually running it and you're just supplying the material, or are you taking a hands-on?
No, this is the pilot. So we'll run it, and we'll run it probably twice. That's important. So we'll testing out the materials, as it were. So I will run it, and Hangleton and Knoll will be involved because there are various services that they offer that will be part of the programme. And they're also active in terms of the recruitment to the programme. So it's a partnership that actually we've worked with them before. And we use the St. Richard's Community Centre, which we find a really accessible and in the current COVID times, a very usable space. So we're grateful to St. Richard's for allowing us to do that. The start date is the 22nd of February. So there's plenty of time for people hearing this broadcast to apply and come on the course. It's open entry. There's no selection method. It's just a question of people indicating a willingness to become involved.
And is there a charge for it?
There's no charge. It's completely free. And the reason it's free is that we have lottery funding. All of our programs in this area have attracted lottery funding, as in a sense they value us doing this type of work. So as a condition of that, we make sure that what we do offer is free to participants. So there's no charge at all.
And how many students are you able to take on?
Well, that's interesting. I think from the point of view of a size of group, ideally, I don't want it to go much beyond 16, just in terms of people being able to participate. But we are quite happy to double up. So in other words, if we get more than 16 plus, I might well offer a separate session to enable people to enjoy the benefit of smaller groups, which I think is important.
Yes. And coming to the sessions, how long do they last for?
They're generally about 2 hours. It's a very friendly atmosphere we try and create, because I think that's conducive to people learning effectively. So we sort of start with coffee about 9:30. By the time everybody's assembled, it's probably about 10. And then we're run for a couple of hours, leaving a quarter of an hour afterwards to just chat to people individually if they want to. We also are available and contact people during the course of the week if they need to. And what we're saying to individuals on this program, at the end of the 6 weeks, we will offer them 4 weeks individual support if they want to continue working at what we've been doing, because we recognise not everybody proceeds at the same pace. So in other words, some people will view it as a 10-week programme, some will view it as a 6-week programme.
Is it one day a week?
Yes, it's just the Tuesday morning sessions. And there is a quite comprehensive workbook which people can use both in the sessions and to do some things outside of the sessions. Not huge amounts of material, but we want them in a sense to be able to reflect on what they're learning and be able to advance it as they go through. So it's quite comprehensive, and they get a copy of that booklet, either hard copy, and they can have it as a PDF for their computer if they wish.
Sounds very useful. Can you remind me of the date again?
Yeah, the start date is the 22nd of February. That's a Tuesday, and then there'll be 6 Tuesdays after that. Anybody is interested in applying can contact me. You have my contact details, both email and phone, and I'm quite happy for those to be used in order to contact me. And as I say, we're not going to turn anyone away. I think it's really important for people to recognise that they want, if they have a need, then we can meet it. One of the things I would say, Richard, is obviously it's been interesting in COVID times, because COVID has speeded up a number of people's thinking about whether or not they wish to continue working. It's clearly meant that a number of older people have lost their jobs. So some people will have been unexpectedly unemployed. So our age range will be from early 50s through to middle 60s and sometimes beyond. So it's a really wide band of age group. And I don't want anybody to feel that the retirement phrase, which is now, I think, largely redundant, signifies somewhere around 65. It doesn't any longer.
So there's quite a wide range of experience in that group covering those ages.
Yeah, I think drawing on people's experience, particularly when they're working with others, is really an invaluable part of learning in this programme. And we've found when we've run courses before that people have formed firm friendships as a result of being on the programme together, sharing similar interests and concerns. And that's gratifying too. So we're quite keen, if people want to, for them to take their interests and enthusiasms beyond the programme itself.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
Okay, take care.
And you. Bye. I was talking to Chris Baker about the course which his organisation, Work and Learning Opportunities, will shortly be running in this area to help people adjust to retirement from work. The course starts on February the 22nd. It's free, and you can find out more details by emailing Chris. His address is chrisbaker@workandlearning.co.uk. That's chrisbaker@workandlearning.co.uk. Or you can phone him on 07572 077 340. That's 07572 077 340. Now, I wonder if you recognise this music. Just in case you don't, it's the signature tune to the television programme The Repair Shop, which is, of course, presented, amongst other people, by Jay Blades. And the relevance of this music to our final item will become clear shortly. This last item is actually one that I wanted to include in our New Year roundup of the best items of 2021, but there wasn't room for it, so I'm putting it in now. Here's Chris English to introduce it.
A Brighton community hero has been recognised with a bespoke bench, and the bench is in Queen's Park in Brighton, all in honour of a young lady, Emily Kenward. If that name sounds familiar, my colleague Richard Davis spoke to her in July last year to talk about time to talk befriending. And I'm pleased to say that Emily will be joining us shortly. But first, here's someone I hope you'll recognise from the television programme Repair Shop, that itself is made just along the road at the Wealden Downland Museum, which is north of Chichester, to explain more.
Hi, I'm Jay Blades, and this is one of the 12 benches I've designed to celebrate those that have provided invaluable support to communities during the COVID-19 pandemic. Emily Kenward is the founder of the charity Time to Talk Befriending, which provided immense support to elderly people during lockdown. The charity specialises in reaching out to the elderly and the vulnerable, particularly in trying to build up support for those who have few friends or company. From its modest beginnings in 2013, it grew to a team of 8 with 500 volunteers and supporters by this year. But the demand for the charity's services rocketed over lockdown, as staff and volunteers sought to support over 800 vulnerable elderly people, many who could no longer have face-to-face contact, but who also needed provisions like food and medication. The idea for the charity first began almost 10 years ago, when Emily Kenward was a mature student studying social work at Brighton University. Each day she would walk past a little church in Kemptown and notice the high-rise blocks with their rows of windows, with all the curtains closed. She knew from her studies that the blocks were senior housing schemes where hundreds of older people lived. But after researching the subject, she found that many people in the area hadn't seen or talked to anybody for months. The discovery prompted Emily to set up a charity, connecting the elderly people of the area with volunteers for friendship and company, offering them support to get to group events or try to build networks of friends in the area. Many of them simply wanted a friendly face to visit them at home. The charity has also become one of the many charities supported by the National Lottery, with players contributing around £30 million a week to good causes. Emily says, "The heartbreaking thing is people telling us they don't want to be here anymore because they have no purpose and they feel so alone. But quite quickly, we literally see people's lives transform. People come to life and they feel like they're in the world again. These are people with an amazingly rich life history. So it feels like a privilege to be able to offer an opportunity for them not to wilt away and feel forgotten. Over lockdown, Emily and her team switched away from face-to-face contact with her members, most who are aged 80 and over, and many that are living with long-term health conditions. Instead, the charity began providing them with fresh meals and emergency care packages every week. Referrals from the council's emergency hubs also increased dramatically, but the success of the charity's work has been incredible. Emily says the most uplifting moments are just hearing their stories. People have written in to us to say they didn't have any family or friends, but now they feel like they're not on their own and belong to a community. Emily, that's in her second year of National Lottery funding, says the long-term goal is to replicate what we're doing and help many, many more people. The National Lottery's funding's been brilliant and now also means we can work in Worthing. She says loneliness is in the spotlight and befriending is needed more now than it's ever been. So I feel very proud of the team and everything is achieved.
Well, I'm pleased to say Emily's joining us now. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Chris. Great to be here. Thank you.
And welcome once again to At Home This Morning. The bench, how did that all come about?
Well, it was a big surprise, I have to say. It came about in the middle of the pandemic last year. We extended our work into another area in Sussex thanks to funding from the National Lottery. And as a result of all the work that we were doing, responding to the needs of our own existing scheme members, who are mostly people aged 80 and above across Brighton and Hove and Worthing at the time, and then moving into Ada, we were able to do considerably more than we were before. And actually, the charity itself doubled in size. We did huge food outreach activities just to try and meet the needs and demand. But the bench kind of came as a result of that funding and our work being recognised. And it was a real honour, to be honest, and a nice surprise.
Was it a surprise? Had you any clue that it was going to happen?
No, I had no idea. Apparently it was someone I'd connected with in the lottery that had nominated me. But it was a really lovely surprise. And I've been to see the bench and it's amazing. I've had quite a few meetings on there now, which is lovely.
And whereabouts in Queen's Park is it?
It's by the duck pond, and actually it's just slightly hidden away. So as you kind of come into the park, you walk around the side and it's on the kind of corner where the swans have been nesting. And it's a lovely little oasis. It kind of stands out because obviously Jay Blades has designed it, so it's very funky.
You mentioned there Jay Blades, and he, of course, is famous for the television show Repair Shop. And I gather he's left a message.
He did. So if you use your phone to look at the QR code, I mean, I don't use these things, so I'm not very technical, but you can hear his voice telling my story about the bench and why it's there, which is very exciting.
Just generally talking about Time to Talk Befriending, because that's your charity, how is that going?
It's amazing. I have to say that although the bench is in my name, really it's in honour of the team, and we've got over 500 volunteers and they all make a huge difference every day in kind of helping to overcome loneliness. So we really specialise on kind of forging relationships between people who are usually living at home, can't get out, are housebound, have limited social connections already, and we help them connect with a befriender for friendship and company, other activities that either we're putting on ourselves or in the community. And in the pandemic, within the first 4 months, we literally doubled in size. So we're now supporting 539 one-to-one befriending matches between amazing older people and a range of different volunteers, anything from sixth formers at Brighton College right the way through to retired professionals. And it feels like a real honour, to be honest, to be able to do that, especially at this time.
And how can people either become befrienders or take advantage of the service?
Oh, well, all are welcome. We'd love to hear from you if you're listening to this and it really resonates with you. People can either call us and leave a message on 01273 737 710, or if you're online, you can look at our website, which is www.tttb.com. www.womenage.org.uk.
That's wonderful, Emily. And will you be sitting on your bench and contemplating the swans and the ponds at Queen's Park?
I absolutely will. I'm meeting someone for a business meeting on Friday afternoon. So I do that quite often now. It's such a pleasure. So I will be.
Emily, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
In that interview, which was first broadcast in August last year, Chris English was talking to Emily Kenwood about the fact that she'd just been awarded the title of Local Hero. And we also heard from Jay Blades about the celebratory bench that he's carved for her, which is now in position in Queen's Park. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in a month. In the meantime, if you want to listen to back editions of any of our programmes, you can find them on the Radio Reverb website. Just go to radioreverb.com, click on Listen Again, and you'll get a list of programmes that you can listen to. And you can find most of our past programmes on that list. So that's something to keep you going in the meantime. So until we meet again, this is Richard Davis on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, wishing you all the very best and hoping that you manage to avoid all the nasties that are going around at this time of the year. Stay safe, stay warm, look after yourselves. Bye for now.